Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Sam, it's such an honor to be back on again. I think this is my third time being on the show, so I really appreciate you bringing me on and thinking of me anytime it comes time to talk Mets. So this is going to be fun. Well, it may be fun for some Mets fans, may not be fun for others. We'll see how it goes.
Well, I think the point, though, is that – and let's go here to start, Anthony. You've met Evan Roberts before. I saw that photo from there was a Joe Veningo Evan Roberts event at Hackensack once
yes.
upon a time, which I believe
yep.
you are a resident of. So, without sorry to give away to the public, but you are rather transparent, I believe, when it comes to your New Jersey roots. And when it comes to Evan Roberts, this week on WFAN, I heard him say that he wasn't just talking about Mets fans, he was talking about the baseball fan in New York. And I thought that it was a very astute observation, or at least in terms of the way he worded it, I thought it was really well conceived. And that was, we as baseball fans in New York City treat every game like it's a football game. And every football game is 10 baseball games. So what are you supposed to do with that?
Yeah, it does feel that way, that all the fans are living and dying on every single game, every single at-bat, especially so earlier on in the season. Obviously, we're different than football, right? Football's only 17 games. It's once a week. And you really have to play well out the gate, because if you don't, you know, the season could be over before you know it. Baseball's different. There's an entire season, a whole bunch of injuries that you have to deal with, call-ups, trades. It's a whole lot different than football. But we're, like Evan's saying, we are seeing that a lot, right? We're seeing, you know, fans getting upset after originally was the first seven games that started the season, right? They lost the final three games of their road trip to the Milwaukee Brewers, and, you know, everything was lost, right? And then you come home, they win the first two games of the series, everything was feeling good again. Now we're back on the loss today, and everything feels off again. So it's everyone's just living and dying off of everything that's happening right off the bat. And, you know, I guess I get it. I mean, the Yankees do the same thing as well. The only thing for them is they've, you know, got world championships. The Mets don't. So, you know, it gets even more frustrating when the Mets every year don't win, and that whole aura is not going to leave, I guess, until the Mets win a World Series.
Well, that's the thing, is that, you know, we're analyzing this, and I'm going to ask you to do so when you talk about your experience at Citi Field. We're analyzing this as a new era in year 3 of 5. That's where we currently are. And everything I've heard, and here, you know, just, you know, it's not a source thing. It's just having, like, just, one, considering you and I, like, watch the game on a pretty much daily basis, and, you know, we lived through the Wilpons for as many years as we did. We're very much analyzing in a very acutely manner what the difference is, not only between the baseball, but the fan experience and just the franchise as a whole, as a corporate entity even. Everything I've heard, and I heard this from a Phillies fan that works for the Mets that I saw rooting his team on last year during October. He told me he hadn't been there when the Wilpons were there, but that everybody around him who were with the team when the Wilpons were there says it's 180 degree difference in just the aura, the feeling. So you can't, however, expect an entire 60 years more or less to get shaken off just because, you know, it's basically like if you look at it with a pyramid in Egypt, if you drop some water from the top, that water is going to take a while to trickle down all the way to the bottom.
Yeah, you go. Let's go back to right the beginning. Right, you had Joan Payson on the team, but M. Donald Grant was kind of pretty much in charge of, you know, all the baseball stuff, and he can ruin the team to the point where they called the stadium Grant's Tomb. I mean, he was probably one of the most hated people that was a part of this team. And then you transition to when they sold to the Wilpons in Doubleday. And, you know, pretty much Met fans only really liked Doubleday. And you saw how that broke through and how Wilpons started taking over more and more. And once that happened, you know, it was just constantly, you know, terrible move after terrible move in the early 90s, the late, you know, the 2000s after the World Series, and then you go from 2007 on up until 2015, and then even a little bit after that. And, you know, this is a whole total change, not just for the team, you know, winning now, but just a culture change. I mean, look at what we've gotten over the last couple of years. Number retirement, Keith Hernandez, right? We've gotten more people into the Hall of Fame, the Mets Hall of Fame, that is. We've gotten an Old Timers Day back. We've gotten Banner Day back. I mean, they're making this more about the Mets than the Wilpons ever did. So it's great to see what they're doing in making us feel more a part of this great history that the Mets have. You know, they're putting more of an onus on this history that we have, and I am excited for that. I know that Met fans now want to see a championship, and so do I. But obviously, there's still stuff that needs to be done to get this team to that point, and it just doesn't happen overnight.
So, look, I'm not trying to be an apologist. Or, you know, you have to analyze and critique, you know, and just regardless of just comparing to the Wilpons. You can't just be grading it on the Wilpon curve, if you will. So I will start here with a criticism, and this is how we'll start the micro conversation of what we have been going through these past 10 games. And I said something in the offseason when Vogelbach got re-signed. For some weird reason, maybe this is just deja vu, maybe it's just me making it up in my head, that I remember talking to you about this when you were on the show during the offseason, which I believe you first were on sometime last year or in the offseason before last year. And I believe you were the second time you were in this offseason, something like that. But what I remember saying either to you or anybody is that Daniel Vogelbach, no matter his splits as well as his talent, should never be batting behind Pete Alonso. I don't, and maybe the problem is there really isn't another good option, and that's just what Buck, where Buck currently is. But let's start from there, and then we're going to dissect this starting after my random comments about Vogel batting fifth with Carlos Carrasco. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, for me, you know, I'm really starting to see that just Daniel Vogelbach, to me, nice guy and all. I don't know how he fits this team, honestly, especially with how much Billy Epler and Buck Showalter talk about versatility. He's not versatile. He doesn't play any parts of the field. He just DHs against when the right-handers are pitching. He doesn't play a position, like I said. I don't know how he fits on this team long term. It just doesn't fit for me. And he's not your prototypical DH. I know a lot of people like to say, oh, well, he takes walks and he gets on base. But you know what? There's other people that do that. Brandon Nimmo does that. He walks and gets on base. You know, other players on the Mets can do that. They need guys that are going to drive and run outside of Pete Alonso, outside of, you know, Francisco Lindor. They need guys that are going to bring in runs behind them as well. Otherwise, what we saw last season, which was, you know, 7, 8, and 9, it pretty much was Death Valley. They weren't scoring runs. They weren't doing anything. They were unproductive, automatic outs almost. So the Mets need someone in that bottom of the order that's going to bring runs in. And I don't feel that Daniel Vogelbach is that type of guy. Yeah, he'll get on base. He'll take the occasional, you know, he likes to walk a lot. But I because he walks so much, I feel like he misses out on some good at-bats and some good pitches to hit because he's always looking for the walk. So I don't, you know, when I think of a DH, obviously, you know, you think of David Ortiz, you think of J.D. Martinez. I mean, you know, the list can go on and on. Nelson Cruz, these guys hit for power. They bring in runs. I don't feel like Daniel Vogelbach does that. And it limits not only the lineup, but it also, you know, limits the Mets on the bench when they need to bring someone in on the field. So I don't know how long they're going to keep Daniel Vogelbach as the DH when you got, you know, you got the young kids trying to come up and hit, you know, Francisco Alvarez. We saw him play today. He got an RBI today. But, you know, when you got all these guys just trying to get on base, it's great and all, but then there's nobody driving them in outside of Pete and Lindor and on an occasion, you know, Starling Marte. But he's at the top of the lineup, so he's still more of a table setter, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And this is like Vogelbach's weirdly one of my favorite people on the roster. If we're just having a personality analysis as well as and the funny thing is that he doesn't have much of a personality, but that's part of the charm is just the way, like when they talk to him, he's just like, yeah, you know, I guess. He's off-puttingly. This is kind of one of my things too, is that like Mark Canna is actually unsuspectingly like dry and funny, and he at first like it seems like he doesn't have this personality, but then like, you know, he's a foodie and all this other stuff. Like something seems to unpack there when it comes to the personality. And Vogelbach, I believe in him, and I want to see him be exactly what he was at the best of his abilities last year. And he's sneaky fast for a big guy. Let's mention that.
Yeah,
it has
absolutely.
Like, you mentioned his walking as well. He has a good eye at the plate, but that's interesting to consider whether he's going to benefit from having an entire full season with Eric Chavez as his hitting coach.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be, you know, and we're only into 10 games, so, you know, he can light it up like he did when he first got here. Obviously, he got injured during that Yankee series at Yankee Stadium, and he kind of really wasn't the same, you know, post-injury. But he was one of the better bats that got traded at the deadline. If you look at the stats from all the guys that got traded, he was one of the better ones. I try not to judge too early. And I don't want to kill Daniel Vogelback for, you know, I think he could be, you know, like you said, what they need at DH. But just like in these first 10 games, you're not seeing pretty much anything. You're not seeing a lot from the other at-bats either, like Mark Canna. He could take a walk too, but they're having a hard time driving these runs in. I don't know what's going to fix that because it's still the same lineup from last year. They didn't add anyone new, really, outside of, you know, Tommy Pham and Tim LaCastro. Everyone is kind of set from last season. Now, the only thing they did was get rid of Darren Ruff. So what is going to be different? The thing I thought was if we got a full season of Starling Marte, maybe that would change things because we know he got hurt in September. That's when the offense took a real dip. Anytime he was out of the lineup, the offense struggled. But if he's struggling as well, and, you know, Lindor and Alonso are struggling, man, it's going to be really hard to get, you know, score some runs here.
Hey, Anthony, I'm not sure if you've disappeared from just me or the audience, but are you there?
I'm here. Yep.
Hey, there you are. There you are. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where did you lose me?
I forget exactly where I lost you. It's been a little choppy. I hope that's not something that our listeners can hear. But I've heard it before where it sounds perfectly fine, and it was literally just my own feed. So going to, like you said, they got rid of Darren Ruff, and there's just a lot of things, you know, just like the Carlos, and luckily there hasn't been much narrative around this, because I think a lot of people, and this is me included, recognize that the Carlos Correa fiasco was not a Mets thing, and that's the first time. If this had happened under the Wilpons, everybody would be ripping the Wilpons. But I'm fairly certain that the Mets saying thanks but no thanks, which is every indication is what happened here, it left the narrative as not just being LOL. It's not another LOL Mets thing, even though it's funny that it happened to the Mets. It basically happened to two out of three teams for the offseason.
Yeah.
So it seems to be everybody understands Carlos Gray is a special exception, and he has some things going on that hopefully him and the Minnesota Twins don't have to deal with during their time together. However, from a lineup perspective, I mean, it's basically like a lot of people have been saying, like, you need one of these young guys, which is basically four people we can be talking about, that you can probably find a position on this roster that they're going to try, whether it's Super 2 status or anything else, they're going to try as much as possible to get them in the minor leagues. And, again, this is not just like a cheap status. This is strategy for a reason, and it's existed for a long time. And there's certain few exceptions that you change that. You can't just go brazen with the Super 2. Pete Alonso is one of those times that you do. And that happened under the Wilpons watch, which was also one of the first times it ever happened under the Wilpons watch. But that was Brody Van Wagenen also. Anyway, this is basically what we're talking about, is that there's four potentially excellent young players that could impact this roster. And when you don't have Carlos Correa in the middle of that lineup, you need this to come through sooner than later.
Yeah. Yeah, especially, you know, we saw how well Brett Beatty played in spring training. He's playing well now. He's hitting. He's been hitting since the start of spring training. You know, Eduardo Escobar has not been hitting well. He also, you know, bear in mind, Eduardo Escobar went to the World Baseball Classic, basically sat and did not have a full spring, came back for, what, the final week, 2 weeks of spring training, and had to try to get acclimated, and he's still probably trying to do that now. Now, I'm not making any excuses. I do want to see Eduardo Escobar succeed. I thought if you were going to get rid of Darren Ruff and bring Brett Beatty in, have him start third base, you put Eduardo Escobar as a DH, and let him get his groove back that way. But you can't do that because Daniel Vogelbeck has to be the right, you know, the right-hand hitting, I mean, the left-hand hitting DH for the team. So the Mets are put themselves in a pickle here. As sooner or later, I said if Escobar, and he hit a home run yesterday when I went to the game, but if he continues to struggle over the next 2 to 3 weeks, I would have to assume that this guy, this Brett Beatty, is going to come up. But I've been hearing a lot now from fans that, you know, Buck doesn't like the kids. Buck's not going to bring up kids. Look at what he did in Baltimore. Look at what he did in Manny Machado. But then again, you know, all I hear is great things for Manny Machado. Manny Machado keeps talking about great things about Buck Showalter. So I just don't know where this is going, honestly.
Yeah, man, we're just going to have to wait and see. But that's exactly what we were talking about with the fact that this is just 10 games. So let's unpack it a little bit more. Carlos Carrasco, Cookie. Mm-hmm. I'm always rooting for Cookie. Right now, he just has not figured it out. We're seeing a lot of the similarities from a couple of years ago when he was coming back from injury in 2021, where the first inning is just something's not right, and then he settles in. And unfortunately, of course, he ended up not settling in enough. If he keeps pitching the way he's pitching – and Verlander comes back healthy, I just don't see how you can justify sending either one of Pearson or McGill back down.
Yeah, absolutely agree. There's no possible way you can send, you know, look at what McGill did on opening day at the home opener. He pitched pretty decently in Miami as well, I thought. And David Peterson is, you know, at least he's kind of giving you some quality starts here. They're both young. I think eventually, if this doesn't work out with Carlos Carrasco, whose velocity, if you check out his velocity, it's down. I think someone mentioned it. I don't know if it was Michael Mayer. I don't know if it was someone on Twitter that mentioned about the velocity in the first inning and the second inning. It was at 92, went to 91. I mean, you're going to need a lot more than that from Carlos Carrasco this season. I don't know if he's still building up or what's going on. I don't want to make any. He wasn't making any excuses. He was very upset at the post-game press conference, very mad at himself, and you can see it during the time he was answering questions. Cookie's got to get going because he's going to lose a spot in the rotation. And you know what? Maybe it might be wise to turn him into – somewhat of a long man, have him come in and be that Trevor Williams type pitcher. Maybe he needs to be that because he always struggles coming in the first inning. I don't know if it's he can't get himself going or if it's just, you know, it takes him a couple innings. I don't know what is going on, but like you said, it's kind of Cookie from 2021 instead of last year's Cookie Carrasco. I said this on my podcast on Subway to Shay. Yeah. On the last episode, I said, you know, more than the offense, this pitching staff, you know, is giving me some red flags here. If these pitchers can't get through five or six, that bullpen is going to be exhausted by the time we get to the trade deadline. And they're just
– No,
you're
absolutely right.
Yeah, they're going to fall apart like they did in 2021 when that's all the Mets were doing, right? Remember – the Mets had all these injuries to the starting staff, so they had openers pitch, and then they had the bullpen start early. And by the time we got to August, and while they were still in first place, they fell apart, still had no pitching. So, you know, this time these guys are healthy, except for Verlander, who we're waiting to come back. But Scherzer needs to pitch a whole lot better, right? He's got to pitch through six innings.
Right.
We got to get Cookie. Cookie pitched four innings both times. He didn't get through five innings yet. I mean, the younger – thankfully, McGill has pitched through five innings and got through the sixth inning on the home opener. And so did Senga. He's the only one that's been pitching so well. But, like, these starters have to pitch more innings because you can't carry all these bullpen guys and just have them pitch all the time here. Look at Steven Nagosek. He had to pitch three innings today, because the bullpen's probably exhausted from pitching. Yesterday, you know, Senga went through sixth inning. They had, who did they have come into the seventh, if I can remember? I can't remember off the top of my head who came in the seventh because.
The new guy. Jesus, it's right on the tip of my tongue, but it's like Santana.
Was Dennis Santana?
Yeah. I'll look it up right now.
Yeah.
But it's Santana. I've been like, who is this Santana guy?
Yeah, you know what? Yesterday I made sure that I got through Kodai Senga's part, and I said, you know what, I'll get up, go to the bathroom now, and then, like, come back. And it was, like, during in-between innings that, you know, I kind of lost track. But actually, Dennis Santana, by the way,
seems to have pitched in, like, 2010 and 2012. So it's not – I don't think it's that guy. But let me look at the 40-man.
Actually, no. Dennis Santana came in the home opener and gave up a home run. It was somebody else who came in.
So we
I'm
do have a Dennis
remember.
Santana now.
We do.
That's so funny, though, that it looked like – just the way the thing looked like, it was like, here's his stats from 2010. I'm like, how old is this guy? Wait a second.
Yeah, I have to – now it's bothering me now
Wait,
that
like,
I can't
number,
think
no,
of this
born
off
the – 1996. Like, I guess he's pitched with Atlanta. Let's see how long he's pitched.
There we go.
For.
I'm going to the box score right now. Okay, so Drew Smith came in, and – He could not get an out, right? You got Kodai Senga goes six. Drew Smith got one out. They had to take him out of the game. They bring in Brooks Raley. He could only get one out. And then they have to go to John Curtis, who has to pitch, you know, one and a third innings to get us through seven and eight. And then obviously David Robertson came in and closed out the game. But, like, these guys, and I'm going to say this right now, Brooks Raley, mm-hmm. he has been very unimpressive. Very unimpressive. I mean, he's our only lefty in the bullpen. I hope it's just early for him, but I don't know. He just hasn't been impressive to me. That's why I like to carry two lefties in the bullpen. But these guys can't – they have to go six innings at the very minimum, six innings to get
his former team is 9-0.
Yeah, and that someone brought that up to me on Twitter. It's like, oh, you know, anytime the Rays trade someone, it's a red flag. We're going to see if that is true with Brooks Raley, because Aaron Loop kind of worked out for the Mets. He had his best, you know, season as a reliever. But this pitching, especially with Edwin Diaz not being available this season, you can't, you know, go through the bullpen the way that the Mets are doing right now. And it's only 10 games. I mean, you know, Sandy Alcantara, I know he's young and he's the stud pitcher, but the dude pitched a complete game. I mean, we got to get guys into – I'm just asking to get you into the sixth and seventh inning. That's the least that these starting pitchers can do.
So looking here at Dennis Santana's stats, career stats, he has generally been very mediocre. His best year was 2021 with Texas when he had a 3.63 ERA. His only other – actually, excuse me, that was a combination. I believe he started with the Dodgers. Well, I don't, you know, I'd have to see where the transaction goes. But he got a minimal amount with the Dodgers, and this would probably make sense that he was really good with Texas and then got traded to the Dodgers and sucked for 15 innings with a 6 ERA. And in 2022, he had a 5.22 ERA, and 2023, he has a 6.23 ERA. So I would say that there's a very high likelihood that this guy does not stick on this roster.
Yeah, this kind of reminds me of, you know, Sandy, you know, just trying to plug in, you know, relievers with, you know, five ERAs and hoping something is magic and sticks. So, you know, obviously they need bodies because there's been a lot of injuries to the bullpen. Obviously Edwin Diaz is one of them, but even in the minors, like Brigham, who they got in the trade, actually both the guys that they traded from the Marlins, Brigham and Eliezer Hernandez, are both on IL right now. So that's a big part of the bullpen. That's you know, we won't be able to go to. Tommy Hunter now is hurt for the who knows thousandth time with back spasms. Right? We need to sign some guys you can count on here. And, you know, there's guys. No disrespect to Tommy Hunter. I like Tommy Hunter. But he can't stay on the field. And it's the same injury every year that knocks him out. He'll pitch two or three games, and then he's got back spasms, so we're putting him on IL again. I hope it's not going to be the same this year, but, I mean, there is evidence. Like, and then the Mets keep bringing these type of guys in. They need to get guys that, especially that don't walk batters, because they're struggling with that as well. I don't know how they, you know, they have some good pieces in the bullpen that they can use down on the farm. But a lot of these guys that they're bringing in, they're either getting injured or, you know, they're just not that good enough. But thankfully, you know, we've gotten some good innings out of John Curtis, you know, could be a good signing at the end of the day. But, you know, this team is going to struggle if the starting staff can't get through 5-6 innings.
Yeah, and we're going to pick it up on the other side of the half hour with the good, because we've definitely talked about the bad and the ugly for a good portion of this
yeah.
time. You are listening to the Metsian podcast, and we are here with Subway Shay's Anthony Rivera, and like we always do around the half hour mark of an hour, we like to check in with you and have you give your shameless plug to the audience.
Yeah, so I've been doing Subway to Shay for about now since 2021. As soon as the deal went down for Steve Cohen to buy the Mets, that's when I started the podcast, because I couldn't do it if the Wilpons were there. It would have been just complete bashing, and I don't want to do that. But started it in 2021 when he took over the team, and now we are in episode 101. We just finished in the poster. That's me with my guest, Will Salmon from the Athletic. Please forgive me, because sometimes, like, I just off the top of my head, I forget things. But Will Salmon of the Athletic came on, you know, to preview this week's game. That was episode 101. I've had on Turk Wendell. For my 99th episode, it was fitting that he was around to come on, and I was grateful for that. And you know, it's been a fun ride. I really enjoyed doing the podcast. I got to meet some of the people that, you know, listen to the podcast at the game. It was fun meeting them as well. And I really do enjoy doing this, and I hope, you know, I hope I can continue doing it forever. I really do, you know, like interacting on Twitter. I mean, we interact a lot on Twitter. It's just great to meet all of these content creators and, you know, podcasts that are Mets, and, you know, working with them and coming on their shows, coming on my show. And then I also write for risingapple.com. And that's been fun as well.
Yeah, Rising Apples does a great job. Unfortunately, the three of us, myself, Mike LeColant, and Rich Spirago, cannot stick on with Rising Apple, but we always wish them the best. And Anthony, you do a great job, and I look forward to meeting you at a game someday, and I'm sure very soon, one way or another. So, Kodai Senga, I know it's only been two starts, but there is this already immediate aura around event pitching.
Yeah. I mean, you saw it with you saw it at Saturday's game, even on the home opener, right? How the fans cheered for him. He got one of the loudest ovations. Saturday, he pitched a gem, six innings gem, and you saw the ghost forks, then putting it out on every time he got a strikeout. And I got a shout out to Athlete Logos for putting those, printing those out and putting them out there. He does a great job. I don't know if you follow Athlete Logos, but he's got a great line of shirts, and, you know, posters and hats. And I even got some of his stuff from when he used to do the, I think he still does them, but it's the neon lights. I picked up a shirt of Buck Showalter of a neon light, but he's got all different moments and different games and different players. That's pretty cool. So he kind of helped out with making those Ghost Fork signs that every time that they did a strikeout, they would put it out there in left field. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, if he pitches, continues to pitch that way, I mean, the aura is only going to grow for Kodai Senga.
Exactly. And so let's go right into it in terms of the 2023 fan experience. I haven't gotten a chance to get out. I wasn't able to get out to City Field these games. I'm hoping maybe one of these games coming up, but probably not. It doesn't seem like it's going to work out that way in terms of the Padres series. So, you know, like you've been going to Mets games for a long, long time. What was the 2023 immediate small sample size fan experience?
I mean, they got a lot of new, you know, restaurants, and obviously the big screen is what's the big talking point for the Mets this season. I have a 20-game membership with the Mets this season. It's the first time I've done that. And obviously, if you got some of the memberships, they got perks that you can do. I think there's, like, batting practice and different events that you can attend. But just walking around Citi Field and seeing all of the new, you know, food, because I'm a foodie. Just like Mark Canna. So trying all the different foods and walking around Citi Field is always a great experience. And I feel like they always change and always add something new to Citi Field. There's always good, you know, viewpoints, because I've also been to the new Yankee Stadium, and I feel like the old Yankee Stadium is better than the new Yankee Stadium. But Citi Field, there's always a place for you to stand if you don't want to sit in your seat. There's always some viewing point that you can see wherever you are, whether you're on the field level, walking around, and there's always things for the kids to do. They got events. They throw T-shirts. I mean, it's always been a fun experience for me going to Citi Field, and it's nice to see a lot of the fans in the stands. And, you know, I don't think there's one bad seat in that ballpark to enjoy the game.
And I agree with you about Citi Field. I mean, there's some major issues with Yankee Stadium. I especially agree with you about Yankee Stadium. The old one was such a pleasant place. And, you know, I'm talking also from, like, personal, you know, nostalgic experiences, just having been, as you know, a converted Mets fan. And those were some of the best games I've ever been to, even though the Johan no-hitter trumps all of them. And the, you know, like, now that I've gotten those Mets experiences, those weirdly, even in a July 5th game in 2012, weirdly has more impact on me than Scott Brosius hitting a two-run home run with my eyes closed against the Diamondbacks. But what we're talking about is these new stadiums, and as much as we had to pick apart with the way the Wilpons first introduced Citi Field, both them, to give them credit, as well as Cohen, have listened to the fans. Wilpons, obviously, less so, but they still understood. They were like, all right, you know, yeah, we fucked up. Excuse me, I hardly curse on this thing, but they understood that they made some severe mistakes, even if it was just Jeff Wilpon shrugging his shoulders at the end of the day in the end of 2010. So, you know, Citi Field, regardless of all those flaws, has always been a great baseball experience, even though I would have changed some things architecturally so we could have had a better view of the bay. It's just throwing that out there. But that makes sense. Right. Yeah, totally.
No, that would have been a better view.
But they, here's the thing, that the, this is where, and now I don't, like, it's just, we spent literally 8 years or so, including on Rising Apple Report, which you should recreate, by the way. just, like, we'll talk another time about that. But, there, you know, for we had 8 years to pick all that apart, and the Wilpons were ashamed of their surroundings, even though it's them who cheapened out by picking next door as the next place that they were going to build a ballpark, even though they had Sunnyside Yards potentially that they could have invested some bureaucratic capital in. That would have been exactly the trend of all the other downtown ballparks that have come in. Long Island City is a downtown, basically. That would have been perfect. And yet they said, let's just build in land we own already. So Yankee Stadium, I don't know if this is still how it is, but when you're in the upper deck in left field and you're looking down on the ball field, the American flag, which is a gorgeous symbol of our freedom, but I still want to see when a player dives for a ball or jumps against the fence, and yet this American, giant American flag is blocking the view. And I have a photo that I took in 2011 during a Mets game that the Mets blew after I went number two in the Yankee Stadium bow. Let me just say real quick, Anthony, I was the reason why the Lenny Harris Mets in 2011 blew a 3-1 lead in the seventh with Dylan G on the mound. It was because at the beginning or in between, like the beginning of the seventh inning and the end of the seventh inning, I had to go number two in the bowels of Yankee Stadium. And that's just unfortunately what unfolded when I got back. The Mets lost 8-3 that day, May something, 2011, Lenny Harris's Mets. So anyway, here's where I want to go, other than to the bathroom. I want to travel to this conversation, Anthony, for our next segment, and that is the consistency of the roster and the core, as people like to say within this game, that is now there, and something that I've really noticed that I both like and appreciate about this team. And so let's start with Jeff McNeil. He's been around since 2018. Brandon Nimmo, he's been around since, I believe, 2016 or 17, something like that, right?
Yeah. Actually, I think he's been around he's been up and down since 2016, right?
16, right?
I know
he was. So. Yeah, and I'll look that up as I say this. Then we have Pete Alonso, who's been here since 2019, and Francisco Lindor, who just in his immediate arrival had to become part of the core and is now. I know Lindor is struggling right now, and, you know, Met fans are going to be what they are when it comes to Lindor, but we're going to have this guy for the long haul, and he's one of the favorite players and people that I've ever come across in viewing this game, or, you know, as a fan. So, and I think that I'm trying to think if I forgot anybody, but I think it's like the core four, really. Like, when you think about what is, like, these guys, and you know they're going to sign Pete Luan. I don't expect, we can go on a tangent with this specifically, but Pete Alonso, I don't think is going anywhere, and we can have that conversation when you I throw it over to you. But the Jeff McNeil, Brandon Nimmo, Pete Alonso, and Francisco Lindor core that is forming with this team that they just need to do a better job of surrounding overall, I really appreciate about this identity of the Mets right now.
Yeah, they're starting to build this team, you know, around not only Francisco Lindor, who they signed to the 12-year deal, but around their homegrown players, right? Brandon Nimmo, who a lot of people didn't think was going to come back. He did, and he wanted to be here. I know everyone thought it was going to be Jacob deGrom, but we don't really know if Jacob DeGrom really wanted to be here long term. It didn't seem that way. I mean, it didn't seem that he, you know, went to the Mets to try to counter offer and work hard with the Mets on a deal and coming back here. I feel like Brandon Nimmo took that initiative, and then you see them sign, you know, Jeff McNeil out of nowhere, and he's going to be here for another 4 years. Obviously, the Pete Alonso thing is going to come. I think they want to wait until this free agency because they're going to have to know how much money to give him and how much money they want to deal out to Shohei Ohtani. Not saying that they're going to get him, but they're going to have to, you know, have the money to do it. So probably holding off on Pete for now. Maybe they'll get that done next offseason, which, I mean, they should. I mean, this guy is about to be the greatest hitter in Mets history. I mean, he's getting close with the home runs already.
Easily.
He's starting to – he could be the better hitter than David Wright.
Isn't he only like 100 off?
Yeah. Yeah, because I think Daryl Strawberry was either at 252 or 258, somewhere around there.
No, I think
Pete's
252.
Yeah, this is Pete's what? 29th, so this is Pete's fourth season. 19, 20, 21, 22. No, this is Pete Alonso's fifth season in the majors. I mean, you don't want to have another Daryl Strawberry incident happen when they let him go.
Knock on wood.
He could possibly be, you know, better than what David Wright was. And if they win a World Series at some point, man, this guy is going to be – I mean, look at what he does on the field. Look at how he pumps up his teammates. I mean, he's a leader out there, just like, you know, Francisco Lindor is. You know, every time you see Francisco Lindor, he's helping out his teammates on the field before and at bat. You know, after he, you know, if he either gets out or gets a hit, you see him whispering into the next batter's ear and telling him what's up. You know, even now with Brandon Nimmo, he's also a leader. Jeff McNeil. This core could really do something. You just have to, like you said, surround them with the necessary players to help them win a World Series. And I hope that they, you know, I hope that they add some more talent onto this team and, you know, not just be, I don't know, they got to have better talent evaluation when it comes to, you know, the major league roster. I wonder, do you also count now Edwin Diaz? Is he also a part of that core now that they signed him for 5 years?
Yeah, that's, I think you have to, yes. You know, he's going to be here for 5 years. He is and this is what we're talking about with the bullpen and is going to be a conversation the entire year unless they get somebody that can, you know, majorly, back up that the bullpen the way Edwin Diaz can, is Edwin Diaz that unfortunately had to be lost to a celebration. And I've spent so much airtime talking about that, how I didn't fault the WBC. I just faulted the celebration, you know, that the WBC is just something really cool. And I didn't want to be – I didn't want to, like, lean into that at the time. So I'm looking at the home run as of October 2022. So Pete Alonso has now gotten – this is 146 he has there. So he is now at 151 after this last home run yesterday. Does that make sense? That makes sense, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're correct.
He has five home runs. He has five home runs, so he's at 151 right now, meaning he's gone ahead of Carlos Beltran and is now behind David Kingman. Dave Kingman. Carlos Beltran's at 149. Dave Kingman is at 154. So that is next on the list for Pete Alonso. After that is Howard Johnson at 192. Mike Piazza, 220. David Wright, 242, and Daryl Strawberry, 252. So if anybody is wondering behind Carlos Beltran, it is Michael Conforto, who apparently the New York Post is still interested in, Lucas Duda, who I am always still interested in, 125 home runs, and Todd Hundley, at 124. Dude, Lucas Duda is never coming back. I don't know where he went. I think at some point he showed up with the Ducks. Maybe I'm wrong. Probably not. He's one home run ahead of Todd Hundley. I have to say, like, what a interesting little battle at the end there, which is now cemented for all time.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately for Lucas Duda, he's going to be remembered for that little error in the World Series that, you know, kind of cost them Game 5, and not for kind of being a stalwart at first base for a while.
But I'd also say that, like, I still hate – I don't hate Daniel Murphy. I think I'll always honor him. But that's just what – like, that Game 4 was so much more of an egregious error than the last-ditch attempt by Matt Harvey and Lucas Duda. You know what I mean? I'll always hold Game 4 – at higher regard, even though I think that Game 5 has gotten a bigger, like, you were already down one game. You would have gone back in the exact same place, yes, that the 86 Mets were. However, you had a chance to tie that series. Game 4 is always the most important game if everybody has one win. And, you know, it has at least one win. So, I will always, like, that, I was going home, and I will always talk about this way. I could, like, as a historian of the entire history of baseball, especially the Brooklyn Dodgers, what I knew about Game 4 of 1941 against the Yankees, Brooklyn Dodgers, and the way that the ball got away from Mickey Owen on a Hugh Casey curveball with Tommy Hendrick striking out but going to first, that felt exactly the same way. Dodgers had a chance in that very moment to tie the series 2-2 against the mighty Yankees. Now, yes, it was only the Royals, but the Royals were in the World Series the year before. We hadn't been to the World Series in 15 years. That right there, Game 4, was the most egregious error of many in that, you know, lose a lead late in 3 out of 4 losses.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a tough pill to swallow, and then constantly using Jerry Familia, even when the team didn't need to close out game three, they didn't need him to come in the 9-3 game to close out that game. They could have went to someone else, give him some rest, let him come back, be ready to go for game 4 and game 5, but there was a little margin for error in facing that Royals team that just was unbelievable hitting. I wish that the Mets hit like that
right. All
season long. But especially since they don't hit for, you know, power outside of Lindor and Alonso. So if they can somewhere get to that type of offense all season long, you won't need to have all that power. But, it's just these guys just get on base, whether it's walking, getting hit, and they're not driving in the run. So this team is going to struggle
right. If
they don't figure out a way to score runs, and maybe just injecting it with some of the youth, some of the kids.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll help.
Man.
We saw today Francisco Alvarez getting his first start, getting an RBI, basically one of the only Mets to get an RBI today. So we'll see if these kids come up. But, you know, Buck is going to go with his guys, and he's going to hope that these guys get out of, you know, this funk that they're in.
All right, so I'm going to fire some off before I go to Brandon Nimmo. Who would you rather in left field? Less than 5-second answer, Ronnie Mauricio or Mark Canha?
Canha.
Ooh, all right.
I haven't seen Mauricio play the outfield. He's not even playing the outfield now.
But they should be trying him out there. And I heard they used to be. So maybe I'm wrong with that account, but
this year he hasn't been playing in the outfield. He's just been playing shortstop exclusively. He was testing the waters out.
They want to trade him. They really do. That's what's going on.
Yeah,
But I just, like, when you see him, though, like, he's just he's a beast, and I think he could be very valuable for this team.
Well, if you say Vogelbach or Mauricio, that might be a different answer.
Good. Ooh. Nice to throw into the minefield that, because that was the appropriate place to go. And the question is that basically you could rotate the four that we talk about in terms of the youth. All right, so Brett Beatty or Eduardo Escobar?
From
what
we've seen,
already
Brett Beatty.
This earlier, but, you know.
Yeah, from what we've seen, Brett Beatty. I love Escobar, and I want to see him succeed, but he's better off being a bench DH player right now.
Okay, and I think this team might eventually be better with people like Mark Canha and Eduardo Escobar with a youthful superstar on the bench. So not the youthful superstar on the bench, excuse me, if I worded that in, you know, improperly. But you understand what I'm saying. So let me think.
Yep.
Okay, so Omar Narvaez or Francisco Alvarez. And also, follow-up question before you answer that, how do you think this injury came out of nowhere and might have been a little overemphasized to try to inject some life into a very early offensive malaise?
No, I don't think so. I think that Omar Narvaez really got hurt. I don't think that they wanted to – I mean, if they wanted to play it that way, then he would have been in the opening day – he would have been in the home opener roster that day, or he would have pitched – he would have played Saturday, and they waited until Sunday to put him
in.
I don't think that that's true. And then he's going to be
– I felt like being conspiratorial.
No, <it's> a, you have to think of it at all angles. But even Buck said he wanted him to be the backup catcher. So I don't know if he just said that just so that, like, you know, you don't want to tell Tomas Nido as well, like, hey, man, we're not going to use you anymore in the press. You don't want them to find out that way. So they got to do it within house. I mean, we'll see if Francisco Alvarez plays tomorrow against San Diego. It's probably going to be Tomas Nido.
Well, can I just say, what is this? I will only argue from a pitching perspective that Tomas Nido needed to be in there in those first two games. However, now mind you, those first two games they won. However, can you tell me right now, exclusively, that you think they would have lost those games had they gone a different direction and showcased their young starting catcher? I thought it just didn't make any sense to me. And Alvarez needed to be starting those games.
I would have started a Francisco Alvarez against with Tyler McGill. I mean, I assume that they have
Friday night. Was that Friday night?
The Friday game, yeah, the home opener. I would have started him then.
Yeah.
But then I would have gave him the day off against Senga, because I don't know if he can catch Senga right now. At least Tomas Nido has had the opportunity to have catch Senga. And, you know, with the ghost fork ball, I mean, he was bouncing a lot of balls at the plate that Tomas had to gather around. You know, so I don't know how Alvarez would have reacted to that. Tomas had already catched them during spring training.
I think that's a very good argument, but here's my follow-up question to you. Do you I forget exactly who was pitching against and whatever the splits are.
Oh, you DH him.
You DH him on Saturday.
Yeah, because it was the lefty was on the mound. It was Taylor Rogers was on the mound Saturday, so you could DH him then. I mean, because if you're sitting this kid, what is that doing for him? Just, you know, at that point, just let him play. I think that's the argument. It's not that, hey, you know, this guy should be, you know, he's got to catch every day. This kid's bat has to be in the lineup. He has to get his reps.
Yes.
And if he's not going to do that up here, people were saying just bring in, what was it, Michael Perez, the catcher. That the Mets have as a backup down in the minors. He's not on the 40-man roster right now. They had him last year. But, you know, might as well bring him up if you're just going to need a backup. And let the kid play every day.
You are listening to the Metzian podcast, and yes, it doesn't make any sense. I think they're going to hear a fervor at some point about this, and they have to be much more strategic, especially I understand they're trying to get whatever they can. You can probably argue that Vogelback needs his reps too, but guess what? Vogelback is probably the perfect person to be coming off the bench against a pitcher that he can hit better. You know, so why not get this kid in? Why not see what's going on? And, it's going to be interesting. I'm sure, look, it's only been four games starting tomorrow. However, I'm sure there's going to be something that comes up if he's not in the lineup. And, look, Tomas Nito is a better hitter than we kind of expect, but he's still never taken that next step. And is he really going to when, you know, you can see him, Tomas is the sixth man, if you will, in the core that we're talking about. And you have to include him, and he's a major part of this team, and he's a major part of that clubhouse. However, he's still, if he kind of has this, like, unsuspecting power, and that's been very valuable as a backup catcher, that should, one of my biggest things with the Mets backup catchers over the years is the fact that they haven't had the proper power within their 242 batting, 220 to 240 that they generally bat. But at the same time, like, you have to let, if he's going to be up there for what, 6 to 8 weeks, is that it? That's it, right? Like, if they brought him up, he's got to play. It's going to be 6 to 8 weeks is what they said.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to have to. And I'm looking
unless he's not hitting and they send him down.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to have to. If he wants to stay up here, he's definitely going to have to hit. He got a nice little at-bat like we talked about earlier today.
Yeah.
But that was it for him on the day. I'm looking at the schedule right now for the Padres series. I don't see him playing tomorrow because you got Darvish on the mound. And then Max Scherzer's pitching for the Mets, and I'm pretty sure that they're going to want Tomas Nito to catch Scherzer. You go to Tuesday, David Peterson against, I think it's Ryan Weathers, who's a lefty. That's a great opportunity to get him playing and, you know, knowing this, especially David Peterson and Tyler McGill, who's pitching the next day. Have him play those 2 days because eventually once Verlander comes back and – if one of these guys goes down to the minors or at some point when Quintana comes back and they both go down to the minors, he's going to have a little experience catching McGill and David Peterson. So you have him work with those two guys. Those are the two guys he should be working with, you know, every day, every time that they pitch. Those should be his designated catching days is when McGill.
Right.
And I think Wednesday Blake Snell's pitching, so that's another lefty. Have him in the lineup both days. Have him catch. He can do that. And it's a day night game too.
Carlos Carrasco would never blame Francisco Alvarez. He's too classy of a person for that. Do you think any of that had something to do with it in the first inning?
I don't know. It could be a combination of both, right? It could be not knowing the kid. It could be also his velocity down. I mean, he wasn't catching in Milwaukee when Carrasco stunk up the joint.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And it was the same thing.
Same
thing happened.
Was it the first inning that he gave up a home run in the first inning in Milwaukee, right? At least just won the home run.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. Well, so, you know, Carlos Carrasco has a lot to prove the next outing. He is number five in the rotation right now, I believe, or number four, is it? Who's pitching tomorrow? You said Tyler, right?
Tomorrow, Max Scherzer is pitching.
Scherzer, so Carlos is number five, right, within the way they opened the season. So,
yeah, it goes Scherzer, Scherzer, Peterson, McGill, Senga, Carrasco.
And Senga is going to be number one when it's all said and done. Knock on wood. I really believe so. He looks fantastic, but I want to talk about somebody that continues to run to first fast, and that's Brandon Nimmo. There is nothing – he hasn't missed a beat. He's not necessarily hitting the cover off the ball, but comes to what his value is in the short amount of time that we've seen him. You know, I think that Brandon Nimmo has shown why you re-sign a guy like that.
Yeah, look at what he – I mean, he's a table setter, right? He's there to get on base. You're there to score him and bring him around. And he's – you know, he hasn't been hitting as much, but he's getting a lot of walks. I mean, one game he had 4 walks. That's the most walks he had in the game, I think, his whole career. I mean, as long as he's getting on base, you know, the other stuff will come. The hitting will come. He's stolen already. I think he's stolen the same amount of bases he stole all of last year. So now we're seeing now speed with Brandon Nimmo. He plays a pretty good center field. His only issue for me is throwing. He can't, like, he won't be able to throw anybody out at the plate. He just doesn't have that arm. But you get him on base, you bring him around to score some runs, and, you know, eventually he'll hit for a little bit of power. He'll come up with some clutch hits like he's done in the past. You know, he's your prototypical leadoff guy.
He really is, and... Before I go anywhere else, Marte, please, since I think I was working all day, so you had a better experience of following everything all day in terms of what happened to Marte and where he currently is, where he currently stands. But this is something I said before we got on air and on Twitter, I said that they have to figure a way to keep this guy on the field. He's just too good, and the injuries are the only thing that necessarily, like, gets in the way of that. Like, he's just such a dynamic player, and you have to – he's not exactly the square reason, because you have to be able to overcome him not being on the field last year, but the Mets weren't able to.
Yeah, the Mets struggled to hit – when Marte wasn't around, right? Like we saw it in September, all the struggles that had, even when he in spurts, right? Because he, you know, he got hurt, never really landed on the injured list, maybe once or twice, but he was always not 100%. And he would get, you know, multiple days off because he had to wash his quad, and we saw in the offseason he had surgery around that area because he had 2 tears, and he was playing with that all season. So then losing him in September when he got hit in the hand and him not being available to get on base to score runs, you know, you can hit for power. He's kind of your, you know, 5-tool type guy if 100% healthy. And the Mets didn't have that, you know, going into the postseason. I know he came back for those 3 games, but he wasn't 100% at all playing in there. I mean, he could barely throw. I remember the game that I went to, he threw wide to third base when the runner was going first to third. He's got to be at 100%. We need him to help out this offense. And I don't know if they're at some point they can move him down the order. Maybe he's the guy that should be hitting fifth. After Pete Alonso, so maybe
you try to change some stuff around. And look, okay, this is kind of like blasphemous saying that Pete Alonso needs to be moved out of the four order. But if you can somehow figure out a way to get Pete Alonso to 5,
I don't know, because Pete had such an amazing season the last year. I mean, looking back at just his at-bats, I paid close attention to his at-bats, him hitting the ball opposite field. It really did remind me of a Mike Piazza-esque type year for him. The way he was able to power the ball to the opposite field, and then, you know, like you saw on Saturday and Friday, he hit massive bombs to, you know, center and left field. For me, Pete's a 3 or 4 guy. He's either 3rd or 4th. You can move him to 5th, and then you've got 6, 7, and 8 who are not going to give you the production you need behind them, and they're never going to pitch to him. So that's something that I worry
about.
Well,
I think, that would be the only thing that I would say is that if you were to have a lineup that Pete can hit 5th in, yes, you need some backup. You need somebody protecting him in the 6th hole, and then you could do whatever you want with 7, 8, 9, I guess, and have Canna bat 7th, which is exactly, I believe, generally where he is. So I guess it's just – and it's just something literally spur of the moment. I never even conceived of this. I swear, Anthony, and all you listeners out there. So you have been listening to the Metsian podcast, and before we get to our final word, I'll ask Anthony, is there anything else that you want us to cover before we go?
You know, I've been thinking about, like, just now what you're saying. You know, I would, you know, I feel like maybe McNeil and Marte would swap positions, or somewhere McNeil has to be before Alonso, and Marte has to be right after him. And I feel like something like that may work. I know for a while we've been wanting McNeil up earlier in the lineup, and they haven't really done that. He always either bats 5th or lower. But
right.
If you were to swap him and Marte, I feel like that may be a better way to get more
out of
the
offense. Here's my question for you. Usually the 3rd hitter is the best hitter in the lineup, right? Who's the most dynamic hitter to protect Alonso in 4? And it's probably the answer that is current, right?
I would say Marte is.
Okay.
I think
so if
Marte
that's
would
the case,
the
what do you do with Lindor? What do you do with Lindor with Jeff in the 2nd hole? If Marte is in 3, Pete 4, you go Lindor 5. Who protects Lindor?
I would put Nimmo either Lindor.
Can I just say, and I guess this is why Vogelback's 5th? Because somebody can protect him?
I guess so, but Vogelback, I don't know. It's a tough thing. It's a tough thing to try to put together. But let's do at least one more. They need one more hitter.
No, what I was
to make
say
this
is that if
possible.
You want to keep this, yes, exactly. And if you wanted to keep Vogelback 5th, this is maybe how you protect him. And you don't I don't know. I just think, like, I was going to say, like, crazy stuff like Lindor 6th. But he's a 275 hitter with 25 home runs and 100 RBIs, something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you say on average, it seems, that's what he's settling in? Last year was a very appropriate year.
Yeah. It's a very Lindor-esque year.
Very Lindor-esque year. And I think he can both do better, but also he got to that 275 by being much better in basically 4 out of 6 months, in the latter 4 out of 6 months. So I wonder, like, is Lindor the one that protects Vogelback, or do you do a better job of protecting Vogelback, because right now Canna can't protect him, even though I think Canna is capable of more than the 267 batting average that he wound up with.
Yeah, I can't see putting Lindor anywhere outside of protecting Pete, and that's pushing it for me. I mean, you can't have him that far down. They just need These guys are going to have to produce, otherwise the kids are going to come up at some point. I mean, Canna's got to, you know, Canna has to be better. Obviously, Eduardo Escobar has to be better. They have the track record, and they got to get going. That's it. I mean, Tomas Nito, he's going to be your 8 or 9th hitter always, right? Like, that's going to be given. I just don't know what you do with, because following Pete, right, you go into Marcana. What does Marcana does best? He gets hit. So he's just going to move on. He's going to move up a base. What does Vogelbach do best? He walks. So you got the guy, you got Alonzo Power hitting the home runs. He's being protected by a guy who gets hit. That guy's being protected by a guy who walks all the time. And that's what? That's 5, 6. Then you go to 7, 8, 9, and that's the end of the lineup.
So here's what, and first of all, just something that just made me chuckle while you were saying what you were saying, was that wouldn't it be just awesome if we could just be like, yeah, we can slide Tomas Nito right here in the 3-hole. Wouldn't that just be like a cool thing to have actually be a reality? But anyway, that just made me like really laugh while you were saying. And I didn't want to chuckle out loud because none of you knew what I was going through. So here's what I would say then. Is that Lindor is 5th with Jeff McNeil up ahead. Lindor is 5th. Vogelbach is 6th. And then you do whatever you need to. Jeff McNeil, he won a batting title. He's one of your best hitters. What is he doing so far down the lineup? I get what you're trying to do with the Starlin Marte thing. However, I think this is a similar situation to what happened, and this is a lot earlier than in terms of the way you break down the basketball season, what happened to the Knicks this year. But when they all, you know, went to a 9-man rotation and cut a certain group of players out, a group of 3, you made it a lot more cohesive, you made it a lot more focused. And look what's happened, and they have a chance to do something special. Knock on effing wood, because I'm not going to curse again. So, you're a Knicks fan, right?
I am, but I really haven't paid attention to basketball in the longest time. I have been monitoring this team. You know, they have done a lot to damage my love for basketball over the last, you know, 2 decades.
Well, right now, this roster, and I have a lot, like, I don't know, man. I'm just more optimistic than I've ever been about any Knicks roster. Any Knicks roster that I have been a fan of, which has been since the late 90s. So, knock on wood, that they can do something special in the 50th anniversary. However, that's not what I'm trying to talk about. I'm trying to talk about the Mets right now. But what happened to the Knicks this year, for all you Knicks fans / Mets fans out there, understand is that they were 13-15 when they realized this, I'm pretty sure. Something along those lines, or at least they got to 18. They might have gotten to 18-18. And be a 500 team when they were just like, you know what, we got to do something completely different. And they just shrunk the roster down from a rotation standpoint. And
they also got that missing piece that they needed that had been missing for over a decade, and that was a point guard. They haven't had a real point guard.
Jalen Brunson is the most important part of this roster. You're absolutely right. He is the first key to making sure this everything that we're talking about and the way that everybody is buying into what Tom Thibodeau wants to do, the way they are buying into the Knicks' way. Like, it feels all of a sudden like it's just like this is who we're going to be as an identity. And they struggled the last 2 seasons in many fashions. Obviously, they made the playoffs in 2021 right after COVID. However, that was very disappointing against the Hawks, and they're a better team than the Hawks now. And regardless of how annoying Trae Young will always be to me because of that game one, we're really going off the rails here with Knicks talk. but yes, exactly. You're absolutely right about Jalen Brunson, the point guard they needed. And he took this challenge on to make a point that people underestimated him.
Yeah, and who is going to be that for the Mets? Who is going to be?
Right.
You know, what drives me nuts every series is the Mets always have this pest who kills them every series. Every year, every team that they play, there's always some pest that drives them. Like, look at Luis Arraez, right? I mean, obviously he's the batting champion from the American League, but he's torched the Mets. Garrett Cooper, he's done the same thing. Look at Brian Anderson in Milwaukee. Even Jesse Winker. Jesse Winker, to this day, still comes back to haunt the Mets. Who from the Mets does that to other teams?
Nobody. Well, David, listen. You talk to Phillies fans, and they're just like, shut the fuck up, David Wright.
Yeah, David Wright used to own Philly.
Annihilate.
When he would play there.
So,
yeah.
You know, like so everybody's got their Chipper Jones. Everybody's got their Larry.
But it's like, when are the Mets going to, you know, like they've needed that big hit in a lot of these games, and they just haven't gotten it. And that's why they sit at 5-5 right now.
The bases were loaded. I think the bases were loaded in yesterday's game before they finally, or it might have even been opening day.
The bases were loaded. The bases were loaded yesterday, here's a test.
Yeah, yesterday.
Here's a test for me for the offense. Okay, if they have the bases loaded, no out or one out, and they get a run only by a walk or only by a sacrifice, I know it's going to be a rough offensive day. They got to start bringing these runs in with hits and not just walks, because that's only going to bring in one run. They need a big hit to knock these runs in, and they're just not getting it.
All right.
Anytime they have the bases loaded, it's a walk or some type of sacrifice move.
So before we go to the end of the podcast, let's preview a very early important series for this team, the Padres. I will, as you get it started, pull up the Padres roster, and let's exactly examine who is coming into this team. By the way, speaking of which, because of the clock, which you and I have not talked about, and we're going to have to now, but we have a 2-hour window, so just letting you know if this goes off the rails, but it's appropriate because this is the first podcast of the season for Metsian Podcast, and we haven't really talked about the way the clock is affecting everything. The Padres won tonight against the Braves, 10-2. I did not have the game on. I'm not sure if you saw the game, but the Padres are 6-4. The Braves are 6-4. The Mets are 5-5, probably, I guess, a game behind the Braves. I don't know who else is better than that. I know the Phillies have sucked. The Marlins haven't been good. I'm guessing the Nationals are the Nationals. So, I haven't looked at the standings. The Padres are coming in. Anthony, what say you?
I'm not going to say that this is a must-win series for the Mets, right? It's still early, but this is a statement series. The Mets can make a statement here, you know, winning this series. We could say maybe even if they sweep, knock on wood. But the Mets need to make a statement here because the Phillies wiped the Padres wiped the floor with them in the postseason, and they almost won Game Two as well. They were coming; they were getting ready to make a comeback. So this is a big series for everyone on that roster. You don't want to lose this one because that would be a tough take. If you can win this series, then you go to Oakland with a team that has just been. They've been terrible. I think they got swept by Tampa, who's just – they're 2-7 right now, the Athletics, but Tampa has been just out of this world. They haven't even lost a game yet. But the Mets have to win this series against the Padres. They have to. They have to – you can't make up for the postseason, but at least make a statement.
Right. So here's how I will tackle the next question. I just kind of forgot exactly how I was going to frame this, but I still just wanted to go into overall baseball. Okay. I got it. How I wanted to go into the conversation about the pitch clock. We're going to start with the standings in the MLB on MLB.com. Brought to you by Hankook Tires. Tampa Bay is 9-0 and 3 games ahead of the Yankees in the division. I think they I'll get into this. You can go into it however you want in terms of overall baseball conversation, but I want to talk about the pitch clock. But I'm saying this about the AL East and specifically Tampa Bay. That player that I always forget the last name of, but I think his first name is Ray from the Mexican team, is just owning. Like he was just he seems ready for stardom, and I haven't.
Is it a Rosarena?
Exactly to how they. Is that it, Ray Rosarena?
I don't know if his first name is Ray, but.
The guy from the Mexican team.
I think it's a Rosarena, yeah.
Okay, so it
Randy,
just seems
Randy
like he's
Rosarena.
Ready for stardom. Randy, thank you. It seems like he's just ready for stardom, and he's taking this team on a ride. Now, I haven't even paid attention to the exact same way, but the exact way that they've been winning every game, but it just seems he's still a part of the swagger that started in the Mexican World Baseball Classic team. So they are leading the Yankees, who are 6-3 by 3 games. The Yankees are 0.5 up in the wild card. Toronto is next in the wild card. With 6-4, the 5-4 Boston, 4 games out. I'm not going to list everybody, but here Minnesota is 6-3 in first. Cleveland, I love. Yeah, just Anthony. It's just nice to small like pretend like this is a football season, even if there's 6 more months of this. 6-3 Minnesota, 6-4 Cleveland, 0.5 behind. Chicago is 4-6, 2.5 behind. Kansas City's 3-7, 3.5. Detroit, 2-7, 4 games out already. The Angels, 5-4, you know, tied with Texas. Houston, 4-6. Oh no, 1.5 out. Seattle, 4-6, 1.5 out. What are they going to do? Oakland, they're only 3 games back. I think they can storm back, if you will. Atlanta is 1 game. Up on the Mets, who are in second place right now. So shut up, everybody! Like, right, Anthony? Miami,
hey,
is
you
two
know,
games back, 4-6.
I'll tell you this: you cannot have known this team won 101 games last year. You could, look, would have thought that this team was...
I've argued, look, Edwin Diaz changes things, sure, but I've argued, especially because of the starting rotation, things are better. I'd rather Senga than Bassett. I know things, like, I'd rather everything going on because I even trust the kid more than I trust Bassett at this point. So I'm happy Bassett is not going down the stretch with me. I'd rather deal with Tyler McGill and David Peterson at this point because I think and know because of their heart that I will get a Robert Seth Lugo, how am I forgetting his
Gazelman.
Last name? Robert Gazelman.
Gazelman,
the Gazelle.
Yeah.
The Gazelle. The Gazelle. 2016 is what I'm talking about. I know I'll get full out effort because you're trying to prove something. I'd rather go that direction here. But I still think, you know, and hopefully Jose Quintana, who luckily had a benign thing, will come back healthy. I just think one way or another, we're better off without Bassett on the team. Anyway, so Washington's 3-7, Phillies are 3-6, 2.5 and 3.0 respectively, reverse respectively, actually, because Philly, Washington. Milwaukee is 7-2. They are just looking good with 3 wins against us out of that 7. Pittsburgh, 6-3, 1 game behind. 6-3, Pittsburgh trying to tell everybody just, you know, Andrew McCutchen knew there was talent here, and we're going to surprise some people. Chicago Cubs are 4-4, 2.5.
Although I will tell you this.
Fans are doing exactly what we are.
I will tell you this about the Pirates. They lost probably their next future star today. O'Neill Cruz sliding into home plate. I think he fractured his leg. He's done for the – he might be done for the season.
Oh,
so that's a big blow to the Pirates. Yep.
Well, he
if you get
he
it, if you haven't checked it out and you get
it's, even against
you
us.
Know what, I'm going to send you the video later on Instagram so you can check it out.
All right. All right. I don't know if I want to watch that, but Jesus. Oh, that's sad. Because like you want, you know, and the Pirates are a classic franchise. You know, like
you
want
to see the Pirates do well,
especially considering everybody shats on the owners. Shy Cubs, 4-4, 2.5. Like I almost said, the fans are probably doing exactly what we do. Cincinnati, 4-4, 500. You know, there's some talent there, I'm sure. St. Louis, 3-6. Don't expect that to stick.
No, absolutely not.
Arizona, 6-4. Yeah, Arizona 6-4. Arizona 6-4, trying to be better. But it's just, I'm gonna finish reading these standings and then I'll say this, Anthony. 6-4, San Diego 6-4, Dodgers 5-5, 1.0. Their fans are probably going crazy or just, you know, surfing. San Francisco 4-5, Colorado 4-6, 1.5 and 2.0 games back, respectively. So, with the clock, as well as everything I've read, whatever you want to do with that, I know you probably had a lot of different things you wanted to say about all these 30 teams, which will probably become 32 very, very soon. What do you have to say about the 2023 Major League roster and the MLB I personally think having some success with what they're showing off, the uniforming what you do both on the mound and on the plate.
Are you talking about the pitch clock?
Yes. That's, you know,
yeah.
Just in terms of what everybody needs to be, you know, they wear their uniforms, they wear different team uniforms, but everybody needs to be cohesive with a structure of how long you take to adjust.
Yeah, I enjoy the pitch clock myself. I think it's really helped, you know, speed up the game a little bit, more than them doing the, you know, ghost runner. I think eventually with the success and then showing how quickly these games end, I think eventually they may get rid of the ghost runner to a lot of people's, you know, happiness. But the pitch clock has helped out a lot. There's still players needing to adjust to it and seeing I think I only saw one violation on Saturday, and that was from Senga. I think he had to tie his shoe, didn't do it quick enough, wasn't ready
no,
to mount quick enough.
So he accepted it. He accepted it. Like, he's the first one I've seen that accepted it. Like, he was like, hey, I'm going to have to do this.
Yeah, yeah. And these guys are going to have to be a little bit faster. The only thing I worry about with the pitch clock, and, you know, I think Max Scherzer brought this up, is the deal with, you know, like, their stamina. Like, having to throw a pitch, get ready real quick and throw another one and not, you know, not getting time to take a breath and be ready, you know, them be ready for themselves to throw the pitch. And maybe we're seeing that with, you know, Scherzer, you know, struggling to get through six. Carrasco struggled in his first start with the pitch clock. So
right.
These guys are going to have to get acclimated a whole lot faster and get used to doing this stuff. They really are.
Yeah, the older guys. So my follow-up question with that is, hold on. Sorry, I kind of lost it for a second. My follow-up question to that is, shoot, Anthony, I forgot. It lost my mind, so we're going to move on past the pitch clock. But I think that one way or another, everybody's going to have to adjust. I think that it's appropriate because things got out of control. Somebody who has researched older games a lot, like just – and commercials have a lot to do with it. They do. Commercials – the fact that there's television, but you look back at like a 1937 game, and if it's a 4-0 win with the Giants against the Dodgers at Ebbets Field on July 10th, 1937, it takes 2 hours and 4 minutes for Carl Hubble to get through a complete game shutout. So what exactly is going on to, you know, I believe it's a combination of the commercials, and that's why we've been able to shrink down with this, like, hey, you got to tighten your game up. And we've always talked about R.A. Dickey was really good at getting to the motion as fast as possible. You know, Johan Santana was very good at getting to the motion as fast as possible. Daisuke Matsuzaka was not. And while Nomar Garciaparra, from a batting perspective, was able to kind of, like, part of the routine that he got superstitious about was the fact that he had, like, he timed it out, and he was not out of the box as often as some of these other players have become because he had his routine. All these other players have just they're just like time, you know. It's also on the umpires, and this forces the umpires to get with it.
Yeah, yeah, and they had to get rid of all the times they could take time out. I mean, I remember I was at game two last year of the wild card series, and the Padres, all they did was take timeouts to try to throw. To try to throw DeGrom off. They did it to Bassett, and it worked on Bassett. But, like, you should only, and now they are doing this, you should only have one timeout, and that's all that they have. They can take one timeout, and then they have to be ready to go. But that's it. That's it, just one.
Right. Right. I, you know, I, other than the thing that I completely forgot, which I thought was profound, but obviously it wasn't profound enough to remember, we're going to move on to our final word. You have been listening to the Messian Podcast, and we're so thankful that you do. And Anthony Rivera of Subway to Shea and Rising Apple, I want to, even though I partially gave you another shameless plug, I want you to give us both your shameless plug and final word.
Yeah, you can catch Subway to Shea podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Subscribe there. I also now have a YouTube page, so I've been doing a lot more video podcasts. I just started out with it, but I'm going to probably be moving the show if once it's approved, live on Sunday night, if
nice.
I can. And then I'll have, you know, the week to put out, you know, little short clips from it as well. But I'm getting ready for episode 102, looking get a guest for that show at some point. And then I'm helping out Rising Apple with, doing articles here and there. I haven't written one since spring training because I've had a busy schedule at work. So it's been hard trying to keep up with doing the podcast, watching the games, you know, breaking up stuff on YouTube, and then trying to write an article. But I should be writing one shortly for them. So you could be on the lookout. You know, you could go on risingapple.com. You can go on the About page. You can go under my name and check out all the articles I've written already and all the other great writers that are on there as well. So that's pretty much it for me on my end. Probably we'll have the next podcast out, not this week, but most likely next week coming up.
Sweet, man. And what is your final word?
Final word is that this is a little bit of a statement series. Like I mentioned earlier, the Mets got to make a statement here against the Padres. Definitely have to take the series. There's no doubt they can't lose this series. And got to see some offense, man. Got to see some offense from these guys and got to see length from starting pitchers.
Exactly. Scherzer has to – I mean, this is a and here I will pass it over to you, the final word. Scherzer, the last time he faced this team in this ballpark, in front of me, and I'm not sure if it was in front of you, and you will tell me in a second, but we all know what he did.
Yeah. I was the lucky one. I was at game two. That was the only one I got to attend, the one that they won, so I didn't have to get to see that disaster.
So that's something that has to happen. And, final word. What is your final word when it comes to this team?
Patience, I guess. I mean, I know that not everyone's going to listen to that. You got half of the fan base that is patient. You got the other half that's more, you know, in line with Frank the Tank and the world is ending. Woe is the Mets, LOL Mets. They'll never get out. They're cursed, stuff like that. But I just take it one game at a time, man. Just take it one game at a time. Be patient, and let's see what happens.
Exactly.
It's still early in the season. We saw how the Braves came back to win the division last year, and that was even with the Mets playing as well as they did. So, you know, anything is possible, and we saw with the Phillies that you don't even have to win the division to get into the World Series. You don't even have to finish second. You can finish third. So just get into the postseason and get hot in the postseason.
Amen to that. And again, thank you, Anthony Rivera, Subway to Shea, for joining us tonight. And I wish that Mike and Rich were able to join us tonight, but they definitely send their well regards to you, and we can't wait for all of us to be able to talk again and be at this game. And, you know, that's just Anthony went to a game the other day. I can't wait to go to both Citi Field as well as whatever it's called now in Brooklyn. I think it's is it still MCU Park? Do you know, Anthony?
I think it is still MCU Park for the Brooklyn Cyclones.
MCU Park. Well, Brooklyn Cyclones, the baby Mets, technically, they're high A now. They are full on minor league from April onward, and it's the first time these last 2 years that baseball has been back in Brooklyn in April. For you know, first time professionally that it's been back there. So it's, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get there before the end of the month to be able to experience April baseball again. And it's probably cold out there on Coney Island one way or another, but still people should experience both Mets baseball and Coney Island baseball ASAP, because this franchise has turned a corner. And even if we get frustrated on a daily basis, even if we get frustrated on a weekly basis, even if we get frustrated on a monthly basis, and you know where I'm going from there, this team is still a part of our DNA. This team is still ingrained in us, and we need to make sure that we look at the big picture, because otherwise, as frustrating as it can be from inning to inning, from pitch to pitch, as frustrating as it can be, sometimes you strike gold in that strike zone and you get a hit, or you get it by a bat, depending on what side of the inning we're on. So please, everybody, doesn't matter how old you are, how young you are, everybody in life, everybody out there has to have better nuance about everything. Everybody has to have a bit more calmness. Everybody's got to take a deep breath. I'm trying to do that a little bit more in my own personal life, and I believe in all your Metsian lives, you need to do that as well. So as we stand here, 10 games in, 5-5, everybody take it easy. Enjoy the baseball in front of you that's a little tighter too. And let's go Mets. Take care, everybody. Anthony, thanks again. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Answer.